Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Hello, where are all my friends at?
Hello.
Oh, yay. Welcome to Raw After Dark. Wait, that's the wrong podcast.
Wrong show.
Is Rick here?
I've been on one of those. Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Rick. Were you the caller or the voice?
I was anonymous with my voice distorted.
Oh, okay. All right. So there was a wrestling show tonight. Did you guys watch it?
But of course.
Yes.
We should probably react to it, huh? That sounds like a good idea.
It's the name of the show.
Yeah. Well, so obviously by now you can tell that Harry is not here. I think he's getting one of his toes removed. I'm not sure which one, but best of luck to him. I hope that, you know, he comes back healthy. But we do have a replacement in Rick, and of course we're welcoming back the mainstay Liz because she is officially a part of the show. One day soon, we'll have the original cast and, you know, actually do the show without any hiccups. But until then, we get the beautiful man from the Cajun corner, Rick. How is it? How's the weather right now in New Orleans?
Well, I'm not that far south. I'm a little up north from New Orleans.
Let's just pretend that you're
there. Weather's not too bad right now, I'll tell you the truth. It's the sun's a killer, but we've been getting some rain. So as long as we don't get too much rain, because yes, my house has ended up under the water once before. I don't need that to happen again.
I remember that. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
There was a GoFundMe for you to watch a pay per view, but I don't recall a GoFundMe for your house flooding.
That's a good point.
All right. So with Raw tonight, we officially introduced the King of the Ring tournament for 2019, one of my favorite tournaments that I think hasn't been done well in a very long time. It used to be a pay-per-view, and people would complain that tournaments on pay-per-views just aren't the way to go. I disagreed. I think it was the way that it was presented. This year looks kind of good, and I think we got a good start to that tonight. But before we get into the King of the Ring tournament on tonight's episode, we start with Roman Reigns coming to the ring. We get a little video package of him, you know, people try to kill him or someone, and then we lead to the match, which is Ziggler and Reigns to open the show. So with this match, you get the impression that they're fully aware that Ziggler's not enjoyed by anyone. And I'm not really sure why they're continuing to push that, even though it's not coming off well at all. And what it does, in my opinion, is it gives Ziggler a kind of a go-away persona that doesn't really add anything of value to the show at large. So I think even though in watching this match it was a good one and Ziggler sells like a motherfucker for Reigns, there was never any question who was going to win. I mean, we had the nearest of falls here with like Ziggler hitting the zigzag, Ziggler hitting a DDT posting Reigns, like just a lot of spots that were supposed to add intrigue to the match and drama, but ultimately didn't because of the fact that it was Ziggler. Do you guys feel that Ziggler is just beyond repair? Like, in this match would be, I'd say, a good evidence of that being true. Or do you think that there's something that we could do with him to, you know, change this? I don't know. I feel like he's been this way for a long time. How about you, Rick?
Yeah. I mean, if they really wanted to, I think WWE has the power to reinvent anyone, reinvigorate anyone on the turn of a dawn. I don't know how they would do it with Ziggler. I don't know if maybe Ziggler is the exception to that rule. But, yeah, you're absolutely right where Ziggler is just not believable. And, like, to put it to you this way, last Tuesday on SmackDown, we had a match with Roman Reigns and Buddy Murphy, a phenomenal match. That's another match where there was no question in my mind that Roman Reigns was going to win. Buddy Murphy wasn't going to win that match. Yet, every time Buddy Murphy had a near fall over Roman, Buddy Murphy made me believe. And I was getting excited for those near falls. And that match was great, even though I knew the outcome was going to be Roman Reigns. This was completely opposite. I knew the outcome was going to be Roman Reigns. He was going to, no way Dolph Ziggler was going to beat Roman Reigns. But I just couldn't buy into the near falls. And it was a good match. I mean, Dolph's a good wrestler, but I just couldn't buy into it. Dolph can't make me believe. There's no way I was going to get excited for this match.
Yeah, how about you, Liz?
I think if they were going to reset Dolph, they should have done it, when he came back. What was his last appearance before a Wild Mania? I think, I don't even remember. But he came back doing the same thing, more or less, that he was doing before, whining, you know, that it should have been him. And I said to Ray, you know, last week, one of the things, Ziggler was actually my pick for, I think Rick didn't agree with me when I first said this to him, but Ziggler was my pick for the one who was going after Reigns, you know, a total escalation of his, it should have been him, and failing all the time. So now he's like resorting to attempted murder. You know, it kind of fit, and I think it would have been one way to salvage whatever they were doing with him. But, you know, having Ziggler and The Miz, you know, feud yet again, I mentioned last week on the show that for me it was hard to have that suspension of belief that we're supposed to have as wrestling fans. Because there's certain guys that you know they're friends in real life, but they feud on air and you can get into it. These two, I just didn't buy it. I couldn't like suspend that belief that they were suddenly, you know, fighting about, you know, stupid crap. And I think that killed it too. I think Miz and Dolph, you know, was horrible, and there was no recovering for Dolph from that.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that Miz even got hurt a little bit in the feud. Ultimately, the Miz can recover immediately, but it was just not something that anybody was interested in seeing. But you know, from Dolph's promos to what he's saying, it's not even a fact of whether it's good or not. It's just it's not believable. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for him to crawl on the mat with a microphone begging for another spear. Like, that didn't make sense at all. So yeah, Roman beating Ziggler. I mean, the good news out of all this is that I got 5 points in the fantasy league, so I'm all for it.
Listen, I've gotten so many messages about the fantasy league. I don't want to talk about it on this show. I've gotten like 8 messages before the Royal Rumble affair.
You know what you do? You ignore them, and then you answer
I do. So, I'm banning it from being spoken about.
So earlier in the show, earlier this week, we were informed that Sasha Banks was going to explain herself on the King's Court. To open Raw, we got information that Corey Graves was taking a break or this week, and we got Jerry Lawler on commentary, which when you hear Jerry Lawler on commentary in 2019, it's not bad commentary. It's just the same as 1999, where, mm-hmm. you know, there are cliches like more this than that, or, you know, like it's not bad. It's just out of place. So to find out that he would not be on the show long, I think was kind of a interesting and great choice. So anyways, what I'm speaking about is the King's Court starts, and before the King talks to Sasha, he wants to give his opinion on who he thinks is going to win the King of the Ring. And before he can actually fulfill that complete thought, the Fiend comes and destroys him with a mandible claw. Obviously, this is a moment where the Fiend, you know, is hurting yet another legend and taking them out. I don't think anybody was mad about it, personally. We didn't get to talk to Sasha, but we did get the Fiend. And we did get a replacement at commentary, who I think for the evening did really, really well. So would you have rather had the King run out the entirety of Raw, or was that a welcome back, you know, for him, or was this just the right amount of Jerry Lawler? Liz?
For me, it was the right amount. I like Jerry, but, you know, like you said, his commentary doesn't fit, you know, anymore. So I think it's, I don't know, I just don't like hearing him, you know, too much. You know, like most people, you know, I like him. But I was kind of glad that they found a way to rid us of him for the evening. Although, maybe stupidly, I didn't expect it. So, it was one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, you know, before you answer, Rick, I think that's what I enjoyed the most, is that I really didn't see it coming. And mm-hmm. there were a couple of things on Raw that were surprising. And it wasn't jaw-dropping and like, oh, my God. But it was surprising enough to give you that feeling about Raw where, you know, anything could happen. And I don't remember the last time I felt that way. So although it was minor, it was nice to see. Rick, would you have preferred a little bit more Jerry Lawler, or do you think this was the right amount of the King?
Are you kidding? Not only was I happy to see Jerry not do commentary for the full 3 hours, I was ecstatic that we didn't have to sit through Sasha Banks explaining herself on an episode of King's Court. I mean, I'm all about Sasha coming out and getting her heat and explaining herself, but they didn't need Jerry to anywhere near this storyline with Sasha and Becky, or just keep Jerry away from the divas, please.
Yeah, it really did seem a completely out of place to have Sasha Banks on the King's Court. It doesn't seem like something her character would have wanted to do. And we saw more of her later tonight, and I thought it was a perfect execution. A return like this and a storyline like this oftentimes is rushed. And the very next week, someone has a full explanation that comes off as tacked on, awkward, and just unnecessary. And I think that tonight they did a very good job in not allowing that. They even set it up to where you wouldn't assume that the Fiend was coming, because just before Jerry Lawler came out, we had a promo back from earlier today from Becky Lynch, and it was short, it was concise, but it was a really, really good promo. You know, where she basically said, I asked for this, I'm well aware of it, and, you know, you ran away crying like a little bitch, and now that you're back, I'm here to not only resurrect your career, but to beat your ass. It was very, very small, but placing that immediately before the Lawler moment kind of gave you the impression that Sasha Banks was going to come out, only for them to not do that. How did you feel about the promo from Becky Lynch? We'll start with Liz.
It was one of, I can't think tonight, I apologize. She's been kind of stale, you know, lately. It's, you know, repeating the, you know, the same thing or whatever. But I think it kind of, I don't want to, you know, kind of freshened it up. It was, I guess it's new. I mean, we're getting Becky and Sasha, and it's not Becky and Charlotte or Becky and Lacey or Becky and, you know, whoever yet again. I thought it was pretty solid, and it actually drew me back into her a little bit.
Yeah, the last couple of times I heard Becky speaking, especially, she's good on these, like, little short promo segments, these behind the scene, like behind the stage promos. The last couple of times I saw her do these, she's just been really phenomenal at them. I love her, just her delivery and what she had to say. I'm glad that it wasn't about, you know, I'm going to get revenge on you, Sasha, for what you did, or she wasn't really mad at Sasha being the heel and doing a bad thing. It was more so of, I'm glad you're fired up, and I'm glad you're here to for a fight, because that's what I want. I want you at your best, and I want you, you know, I want a challenge, and I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, it. I mean, I remember reading last week that there was a lot of energy put into Becky versus Sasha versus Becky versus anyone that has happened over since she's won the title. This is the first big time match that I think, which will eventually happen, that everyone is pretty hyped about. And I was concerned that they were going to mess it up this week by allowing Sasha to explain herself and come off as really, you know, like, I'm this and I'm that. And this week they didn't do that. It's more of a slow burn. It's Becky Lynch accepting what happened, but also being well aware that she invited it. And it's Sasha Banks not giving in to what we want, which is an explanation. So after that, we head to a tag match. And it is the return of Baron Corbin, which I'm not sure if it pleased anybody in the crowd, but I know that I was not happy. I think if I never saw him again, I'd be okay. And then something happened during this match that kind of shut me up a little bit. I'm not a big fan of Baron Corbin. I find the character to be lacking any type of drama, any intrigue. He's not good in the ring. He's basically Jinder Mahal of Raw, where he relies on ref holds and being an idiot. But he's been gone for a little bit, and when I was watching this match, Baron Corbin's music hits, I get his place and I get why he's there. So I was like, okay, whatever. And then the match happened, and I will argue with anybody who says that he didn't do amazing in this match. Now, Ricochet was the star. He was the one that stood out. He was the one that was a huge player throughout this entire match. But it wasn't Drew McIntyre that stood out against him. It was Baron Corbin. He was there for every single move that Ricochet needed to do. Now, from a wrestler standpoint, this is a very important job. Ricochet can only look as good as, you know, the heel character allows him to be. And Baron Corbin stood there and was in the right positioning, caught him at the right times, held his ground at the right time so Ricochet could properly bounce off of him, sold for him, took his hits. I mean, I don't think you're ever going to hear me say this again, Rick, but Baron Corbin impressed the shit out of me tonight. I was completely, like, enamored with that match. And also, he took off the, you know, TGI Friday's vest and, you know, showed a black tank top, which hopefully is a step up from the look that he's had over the past few months. Really, it was just weird to see Drew McIntyre and The Miz kind of take a back seat to the Ricochet highlight reel. And another thing I noticed was the fact that Ricochet and The Miz were both acting like they had been teaming together for, like, months. It was small, but it was interesting. It's like they had a game plan going in, and I kind of like that. In terms of Baron Corbin, which was kind of the highlight for me, did you guys see the same thing, or was this just a, you know, absence make the heart grow fonder type thing? Rick, how about you?
Man, I'm not with you on the Corbin hate, first of all. I mean, I know you're giving him praise tonight, so I can't really call it hate, but I've been a believer in Corbin for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had a one-on-one match with Ricochet before he took his hiatus that I thought he did really well with. I find him very capable in the ring. Now, I think you do have something on the character part of him. I think there's a lot of work that could be done with that. But I mean, I find his matches are not horrible. They're not bad. I would say I'm a Baron Corbin fan, and I actually think that he has a good chance of winning King of the Ring, just because his whole stick, at least before he left, was that big introduction where all his accolades are announced before his matches, and I could just see them adding King of the Ring just to pad that introduction even a little bit more, make it a little bit more ridiculous.
Yeah, I know that Corbin has garnered some fans over the past couple of months, and I preface what I said by telling you guys that I'm not, simply so that you could see how much tonight was impressive. You know, like, I really, truly did not, I do not enjoy him in the ring. I think he's a capable wrestler, I really do, but I haven't had a Corbin match that I was like, this was really good, with the exception of tonight. Now, Liz, I'm sure you're more on Rick's side than mine, which is fine. But do you feel that Corbin winning would be winning the entire King of the Ring tournament would be a good win for him, or a waste of the tournament?
I think it's possible to be, you know, to be both. I think the fans would see it as a waste of a tournament. I think I've been a Baron fan for a long time, so I definitely am more on Rick's side. I do, you know, see your point. You know, I've said this before, and I'll probably be saying it every week I'm on this podcast, just because I like somebody or not fond of somebody doesn't mean I can see their faults if I like them, or don't see, you know, how good they are if I'm not, you know, fond of them. I'm not that crazy type of a fan. You know, Baron does need, you know, mic work. He's not the greatest in the ring, but I don't think his matches are so, you know, awful. And this isn't aimed at you, because you obviously actually know your stuff and are very knowledgeable. But I think Baron's one of those ones that has fallen victim to, okay, well, you know, we're bored with him. He's being pushed too much. His gimmick is stupid, which for a long time, you know, it was. So everybody, you know, has, you know, soured on him, which, you know, whatever, is fine. I follow all of his social media. I'm a huge Baron fan. I have been for a long time. And one of the things I like about him is, like, he truly doesn't care. You know, he's kind of like Kevin Owens in that respect, and, like, how he, you know, reacts to the fans on Twitter and whatever. But, you know, I do, if he's a heel and you hate him, he's somewhat, you know, doing his job. But I get what you're saying about the match. I loved that he was back. It was definitely the highlight for me. So I see both of your points. But as for him, I think winning the King of the Ring would be a good boost for him. But I think a lot of the fans would feel that it was stolen from somebody like Ricochet or Cedric or even Ali or Andrade.
Excuse me. Yeah, I totally agree. I don't know. I just it just took me by surprise that the match was that good. There was a lot of reasons why, but I really wanted to give Baron Corbin credit, because I feel like I don't like a lot. Like I don't. okay, so immediately after that, we go to Booker T joining us on Skype to talk about the King of the Ring tournament, and Michael Cole creaming his pants by saying King Booker, so that was pretty dumb. Moving along, we have a United States Championship match, which was booked because reasons. AJ Styles versus Braun Strowman does not last past 2 minutes because Gallows interrupts and attacks. This sets up a title shot later for the Tag Team Championships, which we'll get to at the main event. And following that, we get our first official match for the King of the Ring tournament. excuse me. With Samoa Joe versus Cesaro, I think all three of us are well aware that this match is going to be like a hard-hitting, badass fest. There were a couple of minor mistakes. I think it was mainly due to Samoa Joe's, you know, core work. I don't want to call him fat because he's Samoa Joe. and realistically, it's not necessarily his fault. Like, for instance, the spin, that's very hard to do that, you know, to lift yourself up for Cesaro to spin you. But with the exception of that, I think the match was exactly what we needed it to be. And it was also one of those matches where it was very hard to pick a winner, because I think both of these guys deserve to win, although one of them had to lose. So with that being said, do you think that the right man won, Rick? And if not, why do you think the other man should have?
I mean, it wasn't hard for me to pick to kind of see where the winner was going to come out. I love Cesaro. He's a great worker. But he's almost in that same boat as Sami Zayn is. Or even, I hate to say it, Dolph Ziggler. Not so much where, you know, people are tired of seeing him. We all love seeing his matches. But just the way the company pushes him, it seems like they know he's a good hand. They put him out there to put on good matches. But I don't see them ever taking him serious enough to give him the kind of push that I know that they want to give someone like Samoa Joe. So I always, you know, going into this match, I knew Samoa Joe was going to win. It was no big surprise there. And I would like to see more for Cesaro, but that didn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't want them to run out of time. I truly think that Cesaro could be at the top of the entire show, and it would be perfectly okay. The dude is built. Like, he's buff. Also, he's got a unique look by comparison of who we've seen in the main event. And also, he's just amazing. I mean, you know me. I've always been a big Cesaro fan, and it hurt for me to trade him in totally not the fantasy league that we are in, because we're not allowed to talk about that with Liz. But I kind of saw the writing on the wall that he wasn't going to be taking, you know, winning this tournament or even in the first round. So I had to make a sacrifice for my beautiful blue-haired vixen. Liz, and with regard to Samoa Joe and him winning this, do you see him going any further than this? Is this something that could catapult Joe into the main event finally and stay, or is he just, you know, basically cannon fodder for who will eventually win?
I hope so. And from a personal perspective, my final two, I kind of think Owens or Joe. I guess I'm really like hoping Owens or Joe would win it. Those are who I would want to win it, one of the two of them. I mean, it's long overdue. I mean, even for Cesaro, but it's long overdue for, you know, for Joe. It's about time that they gave him something decent. Yeah,
you know, it's going to be interesting, because the King of the Ring, I think that a lot of us have this idea about King of the Ring, how, like, it's going to push this person to the main event, it's going to catapult them to the big leagues and whatnot. But more often than not, it doesn't really do that. It gives the person the edge, it gives them a character, but I can't recall, you know, King of the Ring going immediately to the main event. With the exception of very few. It's the same thing with the Money in the Bank, where, I mean, Rick, you know, we've talked about this over and over, where certain tools that the WWE has at their disposal, they could easily use to push someone to the main event, but sometimes they just use it to, you know, keep someone in the mid-card. Oftentimes I get upset about that, because if you have a tool there to use, why not use it to the best of your ability? But before we end the show, I'm going to have you guys pick who you think is going to win the King of the Ring tournament now, and then we'll compare that to when it's close to over and see how well we did. switching gears real quick, I'm going to actually allow Rick to kind of spearhead this one, because if it were up to me, I would skip this entire segment, but I feel like that's not fair to people who listen to have, you know, a reaction to all of Raw. So, Rick, why don't you go ahead and summarize and then ask a question or two about this 24/7 championship moment with Elias and R-Truth. No, you don't want to?
Did we lose Rick? Or do I just not hear him?
I don't know. He might be muted. Let me check the studio. But not, in the meantime, Liz, oh, there he is.
Yeah, I apologize,
Rick?
For earlier. I hit speaker rather than mute.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I don't care.
Okay, so you still want me to
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, so before we got to see Elias in the ring, we did get a little video packet snippet of some social media stuff, which I like that they pushed the 24/7 title outside of just their television shows. And this was from, I guess, WWE.com, where Elias was in the studio recording, and Drake Maverick tried to sneak up on him and get the title, and Elias fought him off. So we got to see that video clip. But then now we get the actual televised segment of the 24/7 championship, and it's Elias. He's in the ring. He's going to do a performance for us, and he lets the crowd know that this will be his last performance because he's just too busy, which is just meaning he's trying to hide. He doesn't want to come out live on TV every week with the 24/7 championship. And during his performance, there's all kind of static feedback, and you know, you could tell something's wrong, and he claims his guitar is not tuned right. So he gives it to the stagehand, and the stagehand is actually R-Truth in disguise with a referee. And after a couple of failed roll-ups, because that's how you win a 24/7 championship, is by rolling your opponent up, Elias is able to escape with the title. So Elias is still our champion. R-Truth failed at regaining his title once again. So, Liz, do you think this is in the end for R-Truth's multiple championship runs with the 24/7 title? You think they move forward with maybe Elias having a longer reign, or someone else trying to take the belt off of Elias?
I think they should. I think we'll see R-Truth pop up here and there, but I think that it's at the point where you need somebody more than R-Truth and Drake chasing after each other. I kind of like this. I know a lot of people are losing interest in it, or it seems, you know, they say they are. But I like that it didn't change hands yet again. I don't think it has to change hands, you know, every week. So, but maybe hopefully we'll see something else pop up on social media. But I would like to see Elias have something to do and hold it, you know, hold the crazy title for a little bit. Maybe have somebody else go after him. EC3, maybe. We haven't seen him in a while. Just somebody other than those two.
Yeah. I seen this. This was actually a tweet from Lance Storm a while back, and I think this is actually could be a really good idea. But we always see the 24/7 champion running away from people. It's always about trying to hide and get away from people. I think they should do maybe make a stipulation, which I know they won't, but this would be such a good idea, that if the champion pins someone who is coming after their belt, then the person they pin can't fight for the title anymore. That would actually give the champion a reason to fight back instead of running away.
Yeah, you know, it's not a bad idea. I just feel like whenever someone adds an extra rule to the WWE, they tend to either forget it or use it when it's convenient, or just can't remember that they made the rule. Case in point would be a wild card rule that showed up again today for some reason. But yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed that particular segment, because I did not. Immediately after that, we go to the backstage area, and Rey Mysterio, who, in my opinion, isn't always that strong on the microphone, has a moment where he doesn't come off completely bilingual and a little bit foolish. He kind of expresses the disgrace that he felt with Andrade ripping his mask off, and how eventually the time has caught up to him, and he's going to have to hang it up and let a new generation come in and help. And, you know, basically he paved the way for them, so he's opening the door for them and walking away. And just as he's about to rip his mask off, which I thought was very, very dramatic in the best possible way, even the crowd was like, oh my God, just before he's about to do that, his son appears and tells him that it's always been his goal, and that Rey had promised him that they would debut, that he would, Dominic would debut as a wrestler tagging with Rey Mysterio. He wants his kids to see, he wants to be able to tell his kids that he tagged with his grandfather, and Rey says that he'll stay for him. So there's not a lot to unpack here, but there are some interesting things. When I first saw Dominic reappear and they kind of mentioned that he was training to be a wrestler, you kind of got the impression that eventually he was going to show up and, you know, wrestle. When he was feuding with Samoa Joe, there was a lot of, like, intrigue as to whether this kid was going to be a part of the storyline, a part of the wrestling. Was he going to get his ass handed to him like he already did? So it's interesting that they slow burned this. And also, it's interesting that they might be hitting a point where they're willing to let this kid wrestle. I don't know anything about his training. I don't know how well he is or isn't in the ring. I mean, he's got some big shoes to fill, even though Rey Mysterio is like 4'2". So I asked both of you, are you interested at all in seeing Dominic wrestle for the WWE? And if you are interested, do you think that this is a transition from Rey to Dominic? Or do you think this is just another way to introduce him? Or do you think this is simply Dominic showing up for a little bit, like a little mini program, and then leaving? In other words, has he signed a contract, or is this just a storyline? Rick?
Man, I hate to be this guy. I really do. But I am curious to see what he can actually do in the ring, because he just doesn't look like a wrestler. I mean, he's not really small enough to make me think he could do like luchador moves like Rey. Like, he doesn't really have that athletic looking body type where I can't really see him jumping off the ropes and springboarding. And at the same time, he's not big enough, like muscular, or I don't know. It's just, I'm just talking about the body image and the body type that I see when I look at Dominic. Just doesn't scream to me as someone that's gonna like the world on fire in the wrestling ring. But I don't know. Maybe he has all, you know, he's being trained by Rey Mysterio. He might surprise a lot of people. It's not all about looks, and maybe he's some kind of technical prodigy. Maverick, so I guess I'll just have to wait and see.
Liz, are you excited about the potential debut of Rey Mysterio Jr.?
No, not at all. I couldn't care. You know, okay, so I don't like Rey. He's a legend, he's a Hall of Famer, he's whatever the hell he is, he's great in the ring. I always found him boring. There's a lot of other reasons, which I won't get into on the podcast because we'll be here for 6 years and it'll just turn into one big, huge argument. So we'll just, you know, whatever. I was never, you know, into Rey. If Dominic can wrestle, more power to him. I hope he has a long and wonderful career. I was kind of hoping Rey was retiring and that, you know, they would just trot him out, you know, again in a mania or two for some nostalgia act. And, you know, he'd go back to work in some indie shows and some other, you know, promotions or whatever, and we would be done with him for a while. I, you know, wish Dominic the best. I hope he's a great wrestler. If this is what he wants to do, I hope he has a wonderful career. I really don't care.
Yeah, I'm always intrigued by story. I mean, that's usually what I'm going for, you know, 9 times out of 10. I think a 1 time out of 10 is just a really good match that overtakes everything else. So when Rey's on the microphone, there's a lot of emotion there. And oftentimes Rey will go out and he'll speak in English and Spanish, and he'll come off as cheesy, like super, super cheesy. Like, you're just like, shut up, Rey. You know, it's not believable. It's weird. It kind of divides the crowd. It's, unless he's in San Diego or L.A., you're not getting a big pop because, I don't know, we tend to think that Spanish is a part of English sometimes. I don't know. But tonight felt a little bit different. There was a lot of an emotional weight. Dominic is a very interesting – I agree with both of you. And, like, I hope that if he is becoming a wrestler, he has a great career because, like I said, he has some big shoes to fill. But in terms of his look, yeah, he looks like – you know, any kid I'd see at the mall using his daddy's money. Cause did you know that shirt he was wearing? It was like $500. so I don't really know. If he blows our mind, great. But there's got to be something. I mean, the WWE's not going to put him on TV if he can't wrestle, right? But then again, you know, we've seen Enzo wrestle and Jinder. Oh, and David Flair. Jeez. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess this is one of those occasions where we're going to legit have to wait and see, because there's really nothing else we can do. They've been kind of keeping it under wraps. I don't really know who's training him outside of Ray, but, I mean, that's one hell of a way to debut, you know, with your dad. So sorry, Liz. Ray's not retiring, at least not yet. So the next match kind of incorporates some SmackDown people with the wild card rule that they decided to implement this week. And we have the Revival versus the New Day. This wasn't really a match so much as it was a storyline advancement. And I got to say, it was a really good one. After the commercial break, we have like about 20 seconds of wrestling. And then out of nowhere, Randy Orton enters and RKO's Big E. And one would assume that that's it. But instead, Kofi comes down to save his brethren, and we get, you know, a few more RKOs. I don't know, everything here worked for me. Everything here changed, it enhanced the feud that was at once just a long time, 10-year match in the making into a sick and sadistic Randy Orton who, you know, is the Viper and blah, blah, blah. And now he has people here to help him out. Really enjoying the Revival teaming with Orton here. Mainly because prior to this, they were going up and down, and there were more downs than there were ups, so I'm okay with it. Do you think that this added a new fold to the feud between Kofi and Orton, or do you think this is just more of the same? Liz?
I'm going to go with more of the same. I was completely confused, I'll be honest, why they were suddenly on SmackDown doing it, on Roar, not SmackDown. Doing this, I like that it keeps moving on. It for me, it hasn't gotten stale at all. For me, I'm enjoying it. I just couldn't figure out, because I'm that dumb, if there was even a reason why it was on Raw, other than I guess the Revival. But I don't think it hindered it in any way. I'm a huge Xavier fan, so now I'm like, oh my god, don't take my Xavier away from me here. So I'm interested in seeing what they do with that. So no, I don't think it's gonna harm it. I don't think so. For me, it doesn't harm it in any way. I'm actually still looking forward to what happens next.
Yeah, I think really the wild card rule they just have to stop pointing it out, because the more they point it out, the more we're like, what the hell's going on? I had forgotten about it, to be honest. Yeah, we've accepted that it's not a thing. And seeing them on SmackDown, really the only reason why they mentioned it was because the New Day has a SmackDown title. So they're like, right. Well, why are they on this show? You know, and that just kind of sucks, because it makes the brands exclusive, but only when it's convenient. And that just makes it inconvenient for us as the viewer and kind of confused. I mean, I'm telling you, if we get to November and they're talking about brand superiority, I'm going to be pissed. Because that makes no sense right now. But with regards to this, I mean, the RKOs out of nowhere, and then the 3D, what would you call that? The 6D, the flapjack into the RKO, the RKO Bible? I don't know. Rick, what would you call it?
The shatter machine KO. I don't know. The RKO shatter machine. Dude,
something like that.
I gotta say this. I don't know if Randy Orton is elevating the Revival, or if it's the Revival that's rejuvenating Randy Orton, but I like that pairing together. And I think one of the good things about having this match actually be on Raw instead of SmackDown was when Randy Orton actually did come out of nowhere and RKO'd Big E, I was completely surprised. I think I would have maybe been anticipating it more if it was actually on SmackDown, but I was completely surprised. And the other surprising thing was we weren't really aware or sure if Revival and Orton were a legit like team or an alliance, because they just kind of had a six-man match last week that was just kind of booked because they had common enemies, but. I mean, to see Orton come out on Raw and just lay waste to the New Day with the Revival, that was an awesome segment.
Yeah, it brought credibility to the entire heel team, both Orton having some followers and Revival being a part of it, and they just looked like a team. They attacked the way that they just destroyed Wood's legs, and everybody was booing, and Kofi looked sad. It was a good moment, and it made Orton look like a fucking dick, which I think is what they were going for. So I also enjoyed that segment. It was another one of those moments on Raw where it was kind of a surprise, where you didn't really see it coming. And again, it wasn't a huge surprise. It wasn't like it blew my mind, but just to see it was kind of shocking. So it falls in line with earlier saying that, you know, you had these moments where you didn't really expect that to happen, like King getting attacked early, not doing the King's Court. And then we have another surprise coming up soon. One is rather than having Sasha Banks on King's Court, we have an interview with Michael Cole. Anything that has more, that adds more Cole to the show, I'm not happy about. But seeing Sasha makes me excited, so I guess I'll call it a wash. He wants her to explain her actions, and she says that it's been a crazy emotional week, and she wants to explain everything from the beginning. She looked in the mirror and she said that blue was her color, and she dyed her hair, and all over social media, all she's seeing is Sasha Banks has blue hair. She's better than ever. She looks good, and she's feeling even better. Cole says something kind of hilarious. No offense, but no one is talking about your hair, which I thought was funny. So we're going with Sasha kind of ignoring the obvious. And she's not being oblivious to it. She's actively choosing not to explain herself. When she is asked about it, when she's finally confronted with the question of why she attacked her friend, Natalia, she basically looks dead in the camera, says, "You're welcome," and removes the mic. Before we get to the match after that, I'll go back to what happens with Sasha a little later. We see Natty in a sling, and she brings up her horrible week and how she was preparing to lose or to face Becky, and also was aware that her dad's 1 year anniversary was coming up. And then Sasha comes out of nowhere and beats her ass yet again, smashing her arm in a drawer. During all of this, the crowd is pretty happy and also wanting Natalia when she's talking. So the culmination of all of this is essentially that Sasha Banks gets into Natty's ear, calls her a baby, and says, tells her to go to hell and to tell her daddy that she said hi. Now, this automatically takes me back to a Randy Orton promo where he said that Eddie Guerrero was basically burning in hell. Do you think that this is in the same vein? Do you think that they went too far with this? Or do you feel that this is a different matter altogether and that this was precisely what we needed from Sasha Banks? Rick?
I've seen a couple of people say that, oh, this crossed the line, and they have a history of doing this in the women's division. Like, they don't know how to script dialogue for women, and they make them say crazy things. I saw people complaining about it. I didn't find it all that horrible. Maybe I'm just a bad person. I don't know. I liked it. It did make me go, it kind of made me gasp a little bit. I mean, obviously, if they're going to use a line like that, Natty is probably 100% okay with it. I think the problem with attacking someone like Natty Neidhart, and like you said, the crowd was kind of cheering for it, she's really not all that likable. Especially when she talks, she really doesn't get all that much sympathy. So if you're trying to get heel heat from beating someone that people don't really care about, might as well say something horrible to get people to not be on your side while you're cheating them up.
Fair point. Yeah, I'm completely okay with it. I feel like it was an amazing moment, and although it I can't say we've seen a Sasha character like this, because we've gone from, you know, Sasha the Ratchet in NXT to, you know, slightly heelish Sasha to pandering babyface Sasha. This is a kind of a new attitude, I guess you could say, or at least somewhat similar to the NXT attitude that she had. But I enjoyed it. I loved it thoroughly. I thought that, I mean, it's going to be hard for me to say anything bad about Sasha Banks. I've done it before, but it's been very, very difficult. But with regards to Natty, she's just not, she's not appealing, and it's not necessarily the writer's fault, which is rare because it's almost always their fault. She's just not good at delivering lines. You know, she has an awkward cadence. She inflects on the wrong syllables. It's just a really weird public speaking thing that she's not all that good at. But anyways, with regards to the storyline with Sasha Banks coming back, and this is, I mean, I'm glad that they're, this is what I think that the WWE writers have been incapable of doing, and that's balancing multiple stories at the same time. So we're getting Sasha attacking Natty, making an example out of her. And if you think about it, Sasha didn't go after Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch interfered, and Sasha beat her down. And again, mm-hmm. tonight, Sasha didn't go after Becky Lynch. It's not that she's not after the title. It's that she's kind of picking an easy target. And eventually, the chips are going to fall, and she's going to have to face Becky. And boom, there's your story. I love this slow burn, because we have a pay-per-view in, what, like 5 weeks, 4 weeks? It's kind of a far way out. So I'm truly loving what's going on here. The minimal talking, the inability to give us an explanation, or actually not even inability, but just not wanting to. The continuous beatdown of Natty, unfortunately, is also a pleasure to watch. And just Sasha going for the jugular. I mean, it wasn't too long ago we had one of the shittiest feuds over broken sunglasses. Okay? This is what we need. This right here. Go to hell and tell your daddy I said hi. That's one of those, like, oh, shit. So, Liz, are you on the same boat, or do you think this is going a little too far? Are you liking Sasha's? I actually don't know much about your opinion on Sasha, because all I did was gloat last week about her return.
So, I guess, I've said it a lot. my opinion on, no, I'm trying to, like, not be too, like, sarcastic. My opinion on WWE women's wrestling in general is that I really don't care about it. There are many talented, you know, women. There's a lot of, you know, there we do get some great wrestling. A lot of them are very talented in the ring. But it's sort of similar to the whole, you know, Baron thing. His mic work needs, you know, work. Hell, so does mine. You know, who am I to talk? But, you know, they don't, for a lot of people, they just don't grab me in. I never liked Sasha. I didn't like her, you know, teaming with Bayley. I just kept hoping she'd beat the crap out of Bayley, you know, at some point. I didn't buy into the whole huggy friendship, you know, thing. I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it. I'm not knocking the talent. They're all extremely, you know, for the most part, talented women. But I said this to Ray last week. For the first time ever, I was like, all right, Sasha, I want to see more Sasha. I like this Sasha. This Sasha seems believable, you know. It's, you know, following her on, you know, social media, you know, to some degree. It seems to be, I'm not saying she's an evil, nasty person. I know a lot of fans, you know, say that about her. I'm not saying that. I don't know the woman. But it seems more natural. You know, the attitude, everything just seems a little bit more natural and free flowing. And I'm a big Natty fan. I don't think she's the greatest wrestler on the face of the earth. She's absolutely horrible on the mic, you know, most of the time, but I like, you know, I don't, you know, hate her. I don't really hate any of them. There's just some of them I care for, you know, less. So even me, like the Natty fan, I'm like, oh, great. She shut her up. You know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. I don't generally care about, you know, obviously there's some things where you feel like they're crossing the line, them using, you know, dead relatives or such. I always thought that, like Rick said, you know, Natty was probably on board with this. That, like, doesn't really, you know, bother me so much. I think if it was a kid, like if they mentioned, like, a, you know, a dead child, that would bother me. But you know, whatever. We all say things like that in our real life. So it's like, you know, for me, it's like believable, not maybe not acceptable, but believable. But for the first time ever, I'm like really, you know, interested in Sasha, and I'm definitely looking forward to the Sasha and I'm Becky. So I think it's right on target. It's really, you know, brought me into it.
Yeah, there's a certain level of energy in this one that hasn't been seen with any feud really since maybe Ronda Rousey, and even that I don't think is equal. This is the type of stuff that wrestling fans are really like, that's what they're going to sink their teeth into. This is more than just, you know, I want your belt or I want your title. We don't really know what Sasha's motives are. We could guess, but that's more Harry's thing than mine. So ultimately I'm just here to enjoy the show. And so far I am. I mean, even as a whole, it was just a pretty good Raw. So we'll back up just a little bit. We have a tag team match between Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. And similar to the Baron Corbin match earlier, there was one person that stuck out specifically in this match, and it wasn't who I thought it was going to be. The match as a whole was not all that great, in my opinion. I thought it was kind of weak. There's a lot of little minor missteps. But Sonya Deville came out from the beginning and just like, I don't know, she just looked good from the simplest things, you know, floating over into a front face lock, Nikki trying to escape it and her locking it on, the knee that she ran with, shooting through the legs, grabbing one. Like, I think she did really, really well. I don't think I've seen Sonya Deville impress me the way that she did tonight. And there were small things. It was a very, very small segment of the match. Not something that you could be like, that was an amazing match. However, that was a really fire start. You know, even Mandy has improved greatly. So I don't know if this was necessarily a way to introduce us to them as a tag team and let us know that they do, in fact, exist. But they're also kind of SmackDown mainstays, which was weird. And the tag team champions won, which makes sense. Liz, I'll go back to you first. Do you think that what they're trying to do is build credible opponents, even though they lost? Or was this Sonya realizing that she's on Raw and kind of just showing up? Because although I don't want to put words or actions into other people's minds or mouths, I do feel like as a wrestler, if you're like, you're going to be on Raw tonight, you would probably want to put your best foot forward. And although, like I said, I'm not assuming that's what she did, it kind of felt like it. Did you see the same thing I did, or do you think that maybe I'm just in a better mood this week? And also, do you think that they're building up some tag teams just because they kind of need them?
I did see it. They definitely need them. I think because otherwise the women's tag teams just seem like such a waste. You know, just, you know, I guess placating them, I can't speak tonight, you know, like, oh, okay, we have all these women, we got to do something else with them to keep the so-called revolution going, we're going to give them tag titles that they've done, you know, pretty much nothing with. I would love to see legit women's, you know, tag teams. Sonya and Mandy are, you know, great friends, and I, outside the, you know, in real life, but I think I like them together. I think she was great tonight. I definitely saw some fire in her. I think you're actually going to see more of her. You're definitely going to see more of Sonya because she's going to be on the new Total Divas. So I think you can expect to see her getting some type of run with something.
Yeah, it's very hard for me to support the tag team titles, and I think that it goes back to Sasha Banks' reason for, you know, leaving or for taking her hiatus is simply you create titles and then you kind of treat them as afterthoughts. There's not really a lot to latch onto. Rick, did you notice a little bit of fire in Sonya in the what is their tag name? Fire and Desire? I don't know. And also, do you think that there's a necessity for female tag teams right now, or do you think these titles are eventually just going to fall by the wayside? Because I kind of do.
I mean, yeah, there's a necessity for female tag teams if they want to have a female tag division. I always thought Sonya was the was the better of the two, even though Mandy's, it seems like the company, if they had to split them up and wanted to push one of them, Mandy Rose is the Shawn Michaels, while Sonya Deville is Marta Jannetty. But I always thought Sonya was better than Mandy in the ring. But I don't understand how they have a tag team division for the women, because you got Fire and Desire and you got the Kabuki Warriors, and I guess you have the Iconics if they ever want to show them on TV. And the rest of the division would just have to be random girls mixed up and matched together.
Yeah, personally, I think that the tag team titles were a bad idea in general. However, I see why Sasha and Bayley wanted to fight for it for so hard. I think that the WWE has made a huge mistake in portraying the women's division over the past 2 years as the best it's ever been, simply because they have good wrestlers. Because I think the true women's, revolution lasted about 6 months, and it wasn't on the main show. It was in NXT. They tried to bring it up, and then, maybe because of Vince, maybe because they didn't know what they were doing. It just never lasted as long as it should. I mean, Sasha Banks has how many title reigns versus how many days she's been champion? It's probably close to the same number. And that's just unfortunate. Charlotte Flair is nearing a record total, and it just doesn't make sense. I think that they try to tout that they've created magic, and Stephanie McMahon could come out all she wants and say how they've changed the wrestling game, and they've done the first Hell in a Cell with women. They've main evented this. They've done that. They did Elimination Chamber. And it's like, you could do all these things, but if there's no good story, if there's no ultimate end, or two or three or four that stand out and become something great, then it kind of, I mean, who cares about any of that? Do we remember the first Hell in the Cell with the women as something spectacular and miraculous, or did they just do it to say they did it? And they did that a lot. So now we get to where we're at now, and truly the only people we're excited about are two of the four people we were excited about a long time ago. And do you know why? Because of the amazing stories that are going on. But when you look at the tag team titles, we're not, I mean, I'm speaking for the IWC and fans as a whole, which isn't, the best thing to do, but I just don't see a lot of interest in it. There's a fine balance that you need, and one of them is really good storytelling and really good wrestling, and I don't think that they have either right now. Like Nikki and Alexa, one could argue that even that's not a good story. We don't really know what happened there. Was Alexa tricking her? Was Nikki using her? Are they really just friends? And if they are friends, what's the next progressional step? Because playing their music one after another doesn't make them a team. It's just a lot of stuff where it's like one of those sections of the show where people aren't exactly all that drawn to the television because of it, especially when you have more interesting things going on. So after that match, we get to the second match of the King of the Ring tournament on Raw. Cedric Alexander versus Sami Zayn. It's relatively short. Cedric Alexander wins with a lumbar check, which is an awesome move, still super crazy. Sami Zayn is, still Sami Zayn, basically a jobber to the stars. It didn't bother me that Cedric won, and that's probably saying more about Sami than it is about Cedric. Because somebody's got to lose. And similar to Samoa Joe and Cesaro, I really didn't know which way they were going to go with this. But if I were leaning towards one, it would have been Cedric. Do you think that this was the right decision moving forward for the King of the Ring? And where does Sami Zayn go from here, Rick?
Where Sami Zayn goes from here is continuing to lose to everybody night in and night out. And they actually addressed it. He actually mentioned how he hasn't gotten a win since he came back. He said his career has gone in the garbage since he returned back from injury, which is quite literally true, because I think on the second week of his third week upon his return, Braun Strowman picked him up and actually threw him into the garbage. So, Cedric he definitely deserved to get the win. I mean, even if they would have gave it to Sammy, I don't think anybody expects Sami Zayn to go very far in this tournament. Cedric has been putting on great matches. I think from all reports, the higher-ups in the back are very high on him right now, and he could be a pick to win the whole thing. They got a lot of good guys in this tournament that I can legitimately see getting crowned king at the end of it.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I think I'm going to enjoy this tournament. I don't think Baron Corbin is going to win, but everybody that's involved, what it does, this is one of the easier ways to not only create a star, but create a tight-knit show, because every match has a specific reason. So there's always something on the line. And when there's something on the line, that person has something to fight for. And when you as a viewer are rooting for somebody, whether it be for or against, you're also invested. The King of the Ring, I feel, has been like a tool that they don't use nearly as well as they should. And I think that at least starting this week, they are. They've made it incredibly important. They've made wrestlers talk about it as if it is equal to winning a title. They've made it such a big deal that wrestlers are saying it'll catapult them into the next, you know, echelon of their career. So they've made it something worth having. And that is portrayed in the matches that we have because they're hungry. And I'm really enjoying – I think that this tournament made tonight's show very, very good, not to mention the other things that happened. So we moved to the Street Profits, you know, they're doing their thing backstage. I'm still not signed on for this. I'm not mad about it. I just don't think that they're funny. I think that Key and Peele do it way better. And, you know, I don't get what the reason is for this. As far as we know, they're not getting called up. They're not going to be having a match anytime soon. I could see where the humor comes from. I think that they have really good chemistry. I think that they have that arrogance like The Rock had, where they can handle the microphone. But ultimately, if all you're doing is a recap of what we already saw, you're coming off as like a guest co-host that is relatively unnecessary. It's like a guest host talking backstage saying, like, wow, did you just see what happened 30 minutes before? Also, later tonight we have this, only just in a more ghetto, urban way. And, I mean, that's how people that I know talk every single day, and I'm cool with that. But when it comes off as forced, it's annoying and kind of insulting. So I'm not a big fan of it. I don't know if you guys are, but this leads us ultimately to the main event, which is another moment on Raw where I was kind of shocked. Not thrown aback and, like, you know, wondering what the hell they were doing, but just a little bit like, eh. And I'll tell you why I was shocked and a little eh in a little bit. But obviously I'm going to go to you guys first. Rick, was this the right decision to give Seth and Braun the tag team titles?
Well, speaking about the fantasy wrestling that we're not allowed to talk about tonight, I am ecstatic that Seth Rollins won a tag team championship. I am way far out in the lead now. But no, getting back to, I actually, when the match was booked earlier in the show, honestly, I thought that Seth and Braun were going to win the titles. I don't understand the reasoning of taking the belts off of the OC. I don't understand the reasoning of having this match, especially if we want Clash of Champions to be main evented by Braun Strowman versus Seth Rollins for the Universal Championship, which all reports indicate that that's where they're going. It would be very interesting to see how they get there now that Seth and Braun are the tag team champions, because someone's probably going to have to turn on someone. And I know Paul Heyman loves booking tag team champs that hate each other. Remember RVD and Sabu in ECW, but I don't know. It just seems like a waste of the tag titles because, you know, those are pretty much props at this point, those belts. And you put them on a guy that already has the Universal Championship and another guy that's probably going to be the number one contender for the Universal Championship. So what do you do with your tag division?
Yeah, it suddenly takes a huge backseat to the storyline that's present. Liz, do you think that this was a good idea? Do you think this was a – I mean, the OC had just won the titles, and it looked like we were getting a big push for all three of the members of this club. And now it looks like Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins outsmarted them and took the titles. Was this something that you were interested in seeing, or did it kind of come out of left field for you?
For me, it came out of left field. Definitely wasn't something I was interested in. I feel like we've seen this. I could be wrong. I could be confusing it with something else. I don't remember all the tiny details like you crazy people. I feel like we've seen this recently. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Or in the recent past that somebody's had the title, one title, and then the tag titles. I don't remember. Definitely wasn't something I was interested in. I think it just puts all the tag teams on the back burners, and it's just we know we're going to get Braun versus Seth, so, you know, how long are they going to hold the titles for? Hopefully, you know, not too long, but we'll see. I kind of feel bad for Gallows and Anderson, and maybe that's stupid and naive, but I was kind of excited for, you know, for the OC to have a run. Not that they won't now, but we'll see what happens. But definitely didn't suit my fancy.
Not a really big fan. I actually really, really, really dislike when we're putting two people together that don't like each other and then they win the tag team titles. I think the only the only time that's actually worked for me was Sheamus and Cesaro. And even after that, it took a long time for me to be okay with it. But they tend to do this a lot, even when they're building up to a pay-per-view where we have a match coming up, but we're going to team you two up this week just to make sure you guys are professionals or you can overcome the odds. And it almost always ends in them fighting. So what we have here is not so subtle stares at the Universal title, which makes sense from a wrestler's standpoint. That's ultimately what you want to get. So that doesn't bother me. But then you get them teaming up, and it doesn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense for Braun to want to team up with Seth, especially after Seth comes down in his backwards hat to save Braun and literally says, "We're even now." Okay, cool. Now I'm going to beat your ass and take that belt. Like, that's it. But instead, we get them winning the belt. And the only thing that I could see coming out of this is them eventually feuding, facing one another at Night of Champions, and thereby either A, leaving the tag team titles off the card, or B, defending those before the main event. Like, I don't know. It doesn't work for me. I don't know how they're going to get out of it. I don't think they're going to try to get out of it. But I'm not a big fan of Gallows and Anderson. I think Gallows is clunky and kind of slow and a little bit plotting. Anderson, I think, is great, but kind of lacks in the character department. So them losing the belts didn't bother me. What bothers me is, again, putting it on two people who, as far as we could tell, are going to be at odds. There is no alternative in terms of who's going to face Seth, at least not from our perspective or what we can see now. So you're effectively booking yourself into a corner. And I've never been a fan of two people teaming up that don't like each other, you know, or that are going to face each other later on. And by the way, I won't give that much credit to me, Liz. It is Harry and only Harry that knows the most random facts and dates.
It really does.
And he probably knows exactly who you mean and exactly what instance you're talking about. With regards to someone who held the tag team titles and another belt, like I'm sure if he's listening, he's like, it's fucking blah blah blah. But if he's not, he'll figure it out. But I can't even tell you who main evented Raw last week. So, but yeah, with regards to the main event tonight, it just wasn't. The match itself was cool; it was fine. But the winning team didn't make much sense to me. And it's not even something where I'm, like, interested to see what they do. I'm not. I don't find this to be intriguing. I would much rather see a little bit of back and forth with Braun. And so, I mean, it looks – if they're building to a point where Seth is smart enough to try to keep Braun away from wanting the title, that's cool, but that also doesn't fit his character. That's not the Seth Rollins that we know and are, you know, kind of disinterested
well,
in.
It could harken back to the Seth Rollins architect character, to, you know, the cerebral side of him, kind of like back when he joined the Authority, where he kind of manipulating Braun into teaming with him, winning the tag championships, that way kind of getting it to a point where he doesn't actually have to face Braun for the Universal title. If they do that and try to turn Seth back heel, because I do find he's a much better heel than he is a babyface, I might be okay with that, but it does kind of go against this new Seth Rollins, who wants to fight everybody, wanted to fight Brock Lesnar to prove himself, but now is trying to avoid Braun Strowman. It'd kind of be contradictory.
Yeah, like if there was anybody else, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of smart. And it's actually kind of smart writing. Like, you know, that makes sense. But that doesn't fall in line with Seth Rollins' character of I'll fight anybody anytime. So ultimately it just comes off as like, why would either man want to team with either man? Why is Seth interested in the tag team titles? Why is Braun interested in the tag team titles? Why is that something that they're after? And why is this team something that they're interested in? I don't like when storylines cause me to ask why too many times, and this is definitely one of them. So that about wraps it up for the show as a whole. We're just going to move right into the, you know, the end results where we tell everybody what we liked, did not like, and all that other good stuff. We're going to start with Rick. What was your favorite match or moment of tonight's episode of Raw?
Hey, my favorite moment was the Randy Orton RKO out of nowhere. And look, ever since that became a meme, I think they overused the whole out of nowhere phrase. But tonight was legitimately an RKO out of nowhere. I did not expect it at all. I love the teaming, the pairing of him and the Revival. I think they work good together. I think they look good together. And this actually made me excited to see not only Randy Orton versus Kofi, but the whole New Day faction versus the this new Revival faction. So that was my favorite part of the night.
Yeah, there's a lot of little trios popping up on WWE TV right now, aren't there? All right, your least favorite match or moment?
Okay, so we didn't really we talked about this, but we didn't mention this specific part of the whole Rey Mysterio and Dominik thing. And it was when Dominik started talking, and I know he's young, he's a kid. I don't think he's ever gotten this much lines to say on television, but he was struggling to find the words to say, and it just came across really bad to me. I was really excited, and I kind of got up close to my TV when I thought Ray was going to take off that mask and retire, and then Dominik just came and ruined it for me.
Yeah, I get that. The MVP?
I'm going to give it to Orton. You know, that was my favorite moment, so just logic dictate that got to be my MVP. Orton and the Revival.
All right, and your show rating out of 10?
I will give it a 7.
Nice. Okay, moving on over to the lovely Liz. What would you say your favorite match or moment is from tonight?
Two different things. Favorite moment, Baron returning, because I am a big Baron fan, and people will hate hearing that. My favorite match was the Joe and Cesaro match. They were, you know, a couple of issues in it, you know, people say, I don't have the eye for that type of stuff. I'll be honest, I just, you know, like what I like. I obviously like big botches, I can see, but, you know. I thought it was a really good match. That was favorite moment, favorite match.
Okay, least favorite match or moment?
Least favorite match / moment. TV was too loud, sorry. Probably the 24/7 stuff. I mean, I actually like the 24/7 stuff, but I don't think this one was as entertaining as it has been in the past.
All right. Your MVP of the show?
MVP of the show, Sasha, because she has made me interested in her 2 weeks in a row.
Nice. And your show rating?
I'm going to go with Rick, 7.
All right. Sweet. Rick, why don't you go ahead and throw it this way?
All right, Tony, what's your favorite match or moment?
Every single solitary moment of Sasha Banks' presence.
And your least favorite match or moment?
Got to go with the 24/7 stuff. The whole blowing into the mic, the whole sound system issues. R-Truth. I mean, really, the only thing I liked about the entirety of this thing is that when Drake Maverick attacked and they went into the other area of the studio, you couldn't hear anything. That's dedication to reality. Other than that, it was just, I mean, there's too many questions, you know, from tuning of the guitar to why did they have another guitar there? Why would they have two sound guys? Why did the refs keep doing these things? Why would a ref give a damn about this? Like, why would he be in disguise unless R-Truth is paying him? Or the fact that Truth revealed himself when all he had to do was roll up Elias. Like, he didn't have to do the big reveal. That doesn't make any sense. Why are you trying to be sneaky this entire time and be in a disguise and then show yourself? I like that Truth, had an issue with possibly hitting Elias with a guitar. But truly, it was just too ridiculous. This is definitely a watching moment if there ever was one.
And your MVP?
It's most likely going to be Sasha Banks until she, she messes up. So, her for sure.
And your rating?
So this is going to blow everybody's mind because I don't think there's ever been a time in the history of the Raw reaction in however long we've been doing this, 4 or 5 years, where I've rated higher than the co-hosts, whether it be Harry or Andrew or Rick or Tom or even Greg, because I'm giving Raw a 7.5. I think that there was so many things that made me want to watch next week. The King of the Ring tournament, Sasha Banks not explaining herself, Randy Orton RKOing everybody and going buck wild. That made me want to watch SmackDown, let alone, you know, next week's Raw. There was so much done tonight where the writing was compelling. And I stress this only because it wasn't amazing writing. It wasn't like fucking throwing back in the seat writing. It was writing that made you want to turn the page, okay? And that's all that I've ever asked of this product that touts itself as a weekly episodic television show on a national network. You continue to call yourself that. I want a TV show that says, wait till you see next week, every week. I want Breaking Bad intrigue. And tonight, I won't put it at that level, but it really opened the door for so much more, as opposed to opening it and beating you over the head with what was on the other side. If there's ever a show that had Heyman's fingerprints, this was definitely it, because it was a show that said, hey, this was cool, but watch, next week we're going to give you a little bit more, and next week we're going to give you a little bit more, and I haven't felt that in so long. So 7.5 to most people would be like a C+, but in terms of Raw, this is a very high grade, because if we were to grade on a curve, This would be like 123%. I was thoroughly impressed. And, of course, there's always going to be issues. There's always going to be things that I don't like because, you know. But I'm willing to forgive certain aspects of the show because of everything else that I saw tonight. I had fun. I enjoyed it. So, yeah, there you go. Blew your guys' mind. That basically brings us to the end of Raw. There's really no strict timetable on when Harry will return. He's got a couple of things he's got to take care of. But when he does come back, it's going to be great. I'm going to tell him that I rated higher than everybody. He's probably going to listen to this tomorrow because he wants to make sure that we didn't sully the name that is the Raw Reaction. But, yeah, so as far as I know, Liz and I will be here next week. Rick, you're more than welcome to come. That pretty much wraps it up for us tonight. I want to thank you guys and want to tell everybody to spay and neuter your pets. This has been the Raw Reaction.
Wait, Tony.
I'll talk.
At the beginning of the show, you said at the end.
Oh yeah, we
you
gotta
have
we gotta do some predictions. Thank you for that. Okay, so Rick, who do you think is going to win the 2019 King of the Ring?
Okay, you ready for this one? About to blow your mind. You might kick me off the reaction for this one. The winner of the 2019 King of the Ring will be Shane McMahon.
If that happens, I will take back everything I said positive about the WWE tonight.
I honestly could see it happen. So on the SmackDown side of things, I think Kevin Owens has one of the easier tracks to get to the finals. It's going to be Kevin Owens and Andrade in the semifinals. But I think Kevin Owens gets to the finals. I think on the Raw side, Raw is harder to predict. But I could see a scenario where Miz gets to the finals against Kevin Owens. And before Clash of Champions, Elias, McIntyre, Baron Corbin, they take Kevin Owens out. And Shane McMahon versus Miz in the finals for King of the Ring. And Shane beats Miz again.
Man, it hasn't even happened, and you're upsetting me. I don't...
Way too plausible,
right,
unfortunately. That's...
right?
I
know, right?
That
that's what's
happen.
So bothersome, is that it could happen.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen, and I will stop talking to Rick if that does. And he left the spreadsheets for that thing we're not supposed to talk about himself. Personally, I'd love Drew to win, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I am going, in the beginning, I said Ali, and just for the heck of it, I'm going to stick by that because they have spent a lot of time making videos and media and all sorts of stuff by him not that they wouldn't because they have before, to just let it go by the wayside. So I think they're going to give it to Ali as a way to reboost him.
Okay. All right. So my assumption over on the Raw side is that Baron Corbin is going all the way. However, I don't think that he's going to be the king. I'm not 100% sure why, but I think that Andrade is going to take it. Just looking at the SmackDown side, he's at least going to be in the semifinals. And if he's facing Owens or Ali, then I think he's going to go all the way. So I'm going to pick Andrade. Kind of out there, doesn't make much sense, but I think it's the King of the Ring, so they really can choose anybody and it won't really be a shock to anyone. Okay, so that's the official end of, what's that?
No, I was going to say, I was actually talking to Greg about it earlier in the week, and he thinks Andrade is going to take it as well.
Wow, Greg and I never agree on anything. That's interesting. I'm going to have a talk with him about that. All right, so that brings us to the end of the show. We'll talk to everybody next week. Thank you all for joining us. Deuces, bitches.
Bye-bye.